From high atop Fox News headquarters in New York City, always seeking solutions, never sowing division, it's Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. Brian Kilmeade here. Thanks so much for listening. Big hour coming your way. Andrew McCarthy will be with us. He's going to break down President Trump's attempt to overturn his 34 convictions in New York now that the immunity clause has been handed down. The immunity ruling was handed down from the Supreme Court. We'll discuss that and so much more. Also, Admiral James Starbitas is the 16th Supreme Allied Commander of NATO, best-selling author, current member of Carlyle Group. And we'll be talking to him shortly. So before we get to them, let me also tell you what's happening today on the campaign trail. We will see if actually taking place separate from the campaign trail. There'll be a Secret Service press conference regarding the attempted assassination of former President Trump. Finally, you're talking about a press conference, first one since the attack on July 13th. So let's get to the big three.
Now, with the stories you need to know, it's Brian's Big Three.
Number three.
We weren't allowing this boxer to compete in our events. I find it remarkable how the IOC apply a different condition to this event. I feel disappointed for the Italian boxer because she's worked extremely hard.
So that's the international, the CEO of the International Boxing Association. Controversy in women's Olympic boxing as two fighters, one from Algeria, one from Taiwan, who do not identify as transgender and were born with genetic abnormalities and XY chromosomes that may not be simple case of man playing to pretending to be a woman. It's complicated. Bottom line is, it has disrupted all of women's boxing, and that ain't fair.
Number two.
Well, they're the weird ones, and if you've ever seen her with the laugh and everything else, that's a weird deal going on there. They're the weird ones. Nobody's ever called me weird. I'm a lot of things, but weird I'm not. JD is not at all.
And that is talking about the attack plan on the left, going after Donald Trump and JD Vance as weird, which is odd. The campaign continues to focus on VP Harris as she zeroes in on her running mate, and the Trump team focuses on a winning message in a target-rich environment.
Number one.
It will be joyous tonight. There's no more joyous moment than reuniting those folks with their families, and I am thrilled for those folks who are coming home. But what you can see now is the Biden administration's done it wrong.
That is the former Secretary of State, CIA Director Mike Pompeo. Monster prisoner swap. We get back innocents. Russians get back killers and criminals. I celebrate the return and fear for the next wave of innocent Americans captured because it seems to pay off. Think about what happened with the Iranians. They swapped five for five, but they get $6 billion that was frozen in South Korea and something similar here today. It's a tough situation, but it's not new. I did Thomas Jefferson, the Tripoli Pirates. The Americans were horrified when our merchant ships were taken over and our men and in some cases women were taken hostage. And in turn, we had to go borrow money to try to get them out. Eventually, we'd have to fight in order to make sure this wasn't done again. Admiral James Servetus knows all about it. His book out now. You got to pick it up. 2054, a novel of the next world war. Admiral, welcome back.
Good to be with you, Brian. Thanks for mentioning the Barbary Pirate Wars. It's a highlight of naval history.
Yeah, of course, and nobody knows it better than you. So let's talk about, we're very happy the Americans are back. Talk about this complicated swap.
As was the case some months ago when we traded an international arms dealer named Victor Boot for a WNBA basketball player named Brittany Griner, you just can't come up with a trade that more exemplifies the two countries, right? So what does Russia value? They value criminals, murderers, and this most recent trade, as you know, Brian, brings home to Russia legitimately convicted criminals, including one of the most notorious assassins of what is the former KGB. So that's the Russian side of this thing. On the U.S. side of this thing is we care for our people. We go out of our way to bring them home, and we brought home a reporter in this swap. We brought home an athlete in the previous swap. We bring home good, innocent people. So first point to be made is the two sides each exemplify the characteristics of their nations, and I think Russia's very, very bad in this. And the second and final point I really take away from this, you kind of edged up to this, but you didn't say it. You know, Americans who get scooped up in Russia, in Iran, or any of these other countries, they are, frankly, Mark Twain had a book, Innocence Abroad. The point is, you got to open your eyes. And I'm not blaming the victims here. On the other hand, please, I say this to America today on your show, don't go to Russia. Don't go to Iran. Not with a U.S. passport. I don't care what your reason is, whether you have family or it's an academic conference or you're an athlete. Don't become a pawn in Vladimir Putin's chess game.
I know. I mean, it's amazing because it becomes a national issue when you make a personal decision. And the thing is, too, it's not happening in Germany. It's not happening in France. It's not happening in England. So that's one thing. Well, when you travel abroad, you make yourself open. Not really. Not in most countries. We know the countries that are friendly. If not, we'll help you. We'll provide a phone number where people can call, and we'll provide answers. Jake Sullivan was emotional yesterday. Cut 7.
These are hard decisions, as the president has said. You have to think hard about who you release in a prisoner exchange. That's been true for decades. But at the end of the day, the president looked at this deal and he said, what we are getting, the value of human life, the value of putting families back together, the value of standing up for freedom of the press far exceeds what we are giving up by sending a few more criminals back to Russia.
So Russia feels like they won this. And they also said, hey, assassins, you get caught. Don't worry. I'll get you out. Correct?
That is correct. And it's frankly a terrible signal. And oh, by the way, who was waiting on the tarmac hugging these criminals as they got off in Moscow? And it was, of course, President Vladimir Putin. And you know, you got to factor in Putin's self-image here. He thinks of himself as a kind of a twisted combination of Henry Kissinger, brilliant global strategist, Al Capone, lethal criminal, willing to do anything, Machiavelli, and a little bit of James Bond thrown into it, all of it inaccurate. But that's how he sees himself. And so he is saying to those criminals as they come down that gangplank, took care of you and you owe me one. And that's how things work in Russia. It's a rotten system from top to bottom.
And he's making it worse every day. So I want to talk about what happened over these extraordinary events that took place in Israel, in Tehran, in Gaza, and in Lebanon. First off, the Israelis took out Hania, and they placed a bomb there, evidently, as late as 2 months before he got there, and they blew his house apart and blew him up. Hania is the one who was doing most of the negotiating on the direction of Sinwar with the ceasefire in Gaza, but he's all over this operation. Then we find out that the number two guy in Gaza's military wing, he was killed 2 weeks ago, confirmation. And then we find out one of the masterminds of the marine bombing, Hezbollah leadership, one, two, or three, he was blown up in his apartment. Do you back those moves by the Israelis?
Oh, gosh, 100%. And by the way, can I just personal note, I graduated from Annapolis many, many years ago, and I've lost many classmates in combat operations in those years. The very first person from my class at Annapolis who was killed in action was at that bombing in 1983 in Lebanon, Marine Captain Vince Smith. I'm proud to say his name today. It's taken a long time, and I'm glad the Israelis, above all, killed Fouad Shakur. You kind of spieled out who those three people were. Let me put it in perspective for an audience, an American audience. Taking out that Fouad Shakur is like killing a four-star combatant commander general. Think killing Dave Petraeus while he was commander of Central Command. Killing that guy Hania in Tehran is killing a top political operative and your Secretary of State. It's like killing Mike Pompeo underneath Donald Trump. And taking out the Hamas operative, that's like killing the Secretary of Defense. That would be like killing Lloyd Austin in today's world. So these are big kills by the Israelis. They were warranted. They're legitimate targets under international law. I say that not just as a military officer, but as someone with a PhD in international law and the dean of a law school after I got out of the military. These were hits that were good for the state of Israel and good for the United States.
Well, it turns out our president doesn't think so. One of the words that came out was not helpful. Here's what he said yesterday. The audio is not great, but listen, cut 46.
I'm very concerned about it. I had a very direct meeting with Prime Minister today. And, very direct. We have the basis for a ceasefire. He should move on it, and they should move on it now.
Your thoughts?
It's possible that two things can be true at the same time. It's good that Haniyeh was killed. It is a setback to getting to a ceasefire. But if I were in a position of authority recommending to a U.S. president or to an Israeli prime minister, I would have said, take the shot. Haniyeh is an evil man who has been at the heart of everything that has happened to Israel October 7th. He deserved to die. It was a shot well taken. And by the way, just final thought on this, how clever is it to put a bomb in a guest house months ago, track who's in and out of there, pick exactly the right target, and take out Haniyeh? How Israeli is that? Well done.
Yeah, and Sinwar surrounded himself with hostages, but evidently he has been spotted. And other hostages have told our own Trey Yingst that he was next to them. So that's where he is hiding, and he's got to feel a little bit less secure today. Admiral, I think it's abundantly clear, but you're the military expert, that the way there's a ceasefire, the way there's a peace agreement, has everything to do with the next fight. So you just can't say, I want peace because I have an election. You have to say the way this ends could decide if they can continue the Abraham Accords or if we just postpone the next horrific attack.
I agree with that. And in particular, this is a moment to kind of assess what Iran does next. In other words, everything you just said, quite correctly, Brian, can be boiled down to one word, Iran. And so we have to see where do the mullahs want to take this. Personally, I sense some tension in their brand new government and with the aged mullahs who are running the country. And I think that Iran is going to respond to this, obviously, but I think it'll be a muted response. They don't have huge capabilities to throw at this. And I think at the end of the day, what sets up a longer-term peace is actually deterrence and strength on the part of the Israelis, and it's the degree to which the United States stands with Israel in this moment. Those are the two things I would be recommending.
And I'm just going to say, over the weekend, we're going to be live Saturday night, One Nation, because I believe they keep talking about a Trump rally. I think the bigger story is going to be the reaction from these attacks from the Houthi rebels, Hezbollah, Hamas, Iran itself. What are you looking for? If you're Iran right now, if you're Israel right now, and you're in that defense ministers meeting, what do you expect? What are you prepared for?
I would be saying to the War Council, we ought to worry a lot about a cyber attack. So you'd be upping your cyber defenses. You'd be working with the U.S. National Security Agency. Secondly, more obviously, we'd be looking at an air attack. This time it won't be 300 missiles, but targets spread out. It'll be, if they decide to go this route, a couple of hundred missiles, but they'll be zoned in at one target to try and overwhelm perhaps a big military base down in the Negev Desert. I think you have to also redouble personal security around your leadership, your prime minister, and especially your ambassadors overseas. I think that's a pretty target-rich opportunity. And then finally, Brian, you mentioned the Houthis maritime. The Houthis have not been heard from lately in the Hamas, Hezbollah level. They're still disrupting international shipping, but they're specialists at going after maritime targets. Look for them to go after an Israeli ship, maybe massacre the crew, that kind of thing. So there's just a basket of things that I think are being considered defensively in Jerusalem, but offensively in Tehran.
And this needs a whole hour. But the Commission of the National Defense Strategy has released a report, and they're saying it's alarming. The commission chides the Pentagon, says it considers too plotting. The administration, so far, it says, have been too complacent to address threats from China, Russia, and the Middle East. It revealed the U.S. faces the most challenging global environment with the most severe ramifications since the end of the war. They also discovered the U.S. industrial production, we've been discussing this, is grossly inadequate to provide equipment, tech, and munitions needed today. This is alarming. We've been talking about it. You've been talking about it. Is there anyone prepared to do anything about it?
First, on the charges, if you will, it's guilty, 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 and guilty of the four you mentioned. I think there is, here's some good news in our divided society. I think there's a growing appreciation on both sides of the aisle that we need to do better at rebuilding this capability, because we're watching ourselves struggle so much in Ukraine. And I was heartened by the fact that the Ukrainian aid package, which you and I have supported, others disagree with, it's a legitimate discussion to have. But in the end, 75% of the U.S. Congress, both Senate and House, voted for it. And I think that can be an example of the kind of capability build we need to put in place. And I'll close with this, because I'm an admiral and I'm required to. But the thing I worry about the most is our maritime ability. Everything depends on our ability to defend freedom of the seas. And we started this conversation talking about the Barbary pirates knocking down U.S. commerce. That was 200 years ago. It's still a great danger.
It is. Admiral, thanks so much. Fantastic segment. Appreciate it. We'll watch to see the ramifications of the Israeli actions. But I agree with you. Well worth it. Admiral, thanks. Have a great weekend. Meanwhile, your call's next, and then we'll talk to Andrew McCarthy. Where there's so many moving parts today. We'll get it all in. Don't move.
It's Brian Kilmeade from the Fox News Podcasts Network.
Hey there, it's me, Kennedy. Make sure to check out my podcast, Kennedy Saves the World. It is 5 days a week, every week. Download and listen at foxnewspodcast.com or wherever you listen to your favorite podcast.
A radio show like no other. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Hey, we're back. I went a little long with the Admiral, but you can understand why. Look at what's going on in the world right now. I didn't even touch really heavily into the hostage swap and what it means in Ukraine for what they say. I guess Russia's making slight gains in some small towns, but this is their offensive. And see where it's going. We also found out yesterday from Steve Moore, who's over just over there on the front lines, that they're having trouble getting munitions to the front lines. So we give them the money, we give them the munitions, but they got to get to the hands of the actual war fighters. That would be key. Coming up next, Andrew McCarthy will join us and tell us the chances that Donald Trump has of reversing the 34 convictions since the immunity decision came down from the Supreme Court. We'll talk about that. And we'll also talk about sanctuary cities and how it relates to Kamala Harris, because she's all for sanctuary cities. How's that going to fly? People in sanctuary cities in 2016, they said, we love it. We have a big heart. We're a nation of immigrants. Now you bring up sanctuary cities anywhere in New York, in Chicago, Philadelphia, San Francisco, in Los Angeles, San Diego. Nobody wants them. She does.
The more you listen, the more you'll know. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Welcome back. Andy McCarthy joins us now. Fox News contributor, former assistant U.S. attorney for the Southern District of New York. Best-selling author. Andy, always great to hear from you.
Brian, great to be with you.
All right. So I guess you're on Skype. I appreciate it. So if you're watching on the Fox app and you want to see how cute Andy looks today with his glasses on and the casual attire, go ahead and do it. Just hit on watch and just swipe over if you're watching the stream on Fox Nation. There you go. So Donald Trump has put together, the people say, experts like you have said, it looks pretty impressive. They've put together their case to get the conviction of the 34 counts in New York overturned, and they cite the immunity ruling from the Supreme Court. Can you lay out what their best argument is?
Well, I think there are so many reasons to get this case thrown out that even though I think they've impressively added to their case with the immunity ruling argument, Even before we had the immunity ruling argument, I thought they had a very strong case to get out of the convictions, not just based on the immunity ruling, but before there was an immunity ruling, the Supreme Court ruled on another case this term, Brian, probably about 5 or 6 days before the Supreme Court, before the immunity ruling, where they reiterated or reaffirmed the principle that the important issues in a criminal trial have to be agreed to unanimously by the jury. It seemed to me that their best argument for getting the case thrown out is that Judge Merchan allowed the jury to return a guilty verdict against Trump without identifying what the second crime was. What they said at the time was that the second crime, just so people remember, the main charge in the case is supposed to be falsifying business records, but it becomes a felony if you do it with the fraudulent intent to conceal another crime. And what Merchan allowed the jury to do was essentially convict Trump without identifying or agreeing to what the second crime was. They tried to paper that over by saying the second crime was a conspiracy. But the problem with that is a conspiracy is an agreement to violate a criminal law. And what Merchan told them is that they didn't need to be unanimous about what criminal law Trump was trying to violate. And that's not a conspiracy. So I think even without the immunity ruling, they had very strong arguments to get this thrown out. But with respect to the immunity ruling, there were a number of things that came into evidence in the case that had to do with actions that Trump took as president. Mm-hmm. I thought the most egregious of them was this claim that they allowed Cohen to testify about completely by hearsay. Trump saying that then Attorney General Jeff Sessions was going to take care of the campaign finance violation or the campaign finance investigation that was underway. I thought that was on its face preposterously false testimony, because what Cohen was saying was that the Attorney General could make an FEC violation go away when in fact the Attorney General has no jurisdiction over FEC violations. But even if you credited Cohen's testimony that Trump said such a thing, mm-hmm. that involves communications between the president and the Attorney General, which are exactly the kinds of things that the Supreme Court in the immunity case says you can't do. And the reason I think it's so crucial is they presented the case, the DA's office did, as if it were a federal campaign finance violation,
right,
under which, to my mind, they offered no evidence, none, that Trump even had the campaign finance laws in mind, much less that he willfully violated them. So this is a crucial piece of evidence, and I don't think it should have come in under the immunity ruling.
Okay, so you have two things, right? Here's the appeal, right? Merchant's not involved in the appeal. And then here's the being the Supreme Court, you go up to Merchant, you ask him if this immunity thing is going to apply to your decision. Is there a chance they throw out some of the counts and not all of the counts?
I think, Brian, the way that they teed up this case, remember, this was an utterly dishonestly charged case.
Oh, absolutely. Where
they took a single, at best, misdemeanor falsification of business records transaction, and they carved it into 34 different felonies. So the logic of it was that if you convict on one, you have to convict on all. But in reverse, the way that logic works is if one of them has to be thrown out, I think that the whole case gets thrown out.
So we'll find out when. I think in all, they're asking now. September's the sentencing. So you got to figure they're going to make a ruling on what they just submitted soon, correct? They're not going to have that much time.
Well, a judge can make the ruling at the time of sentencing. What Merchan has tended to do was rule probably a week or so before big events are supposed to take place. But I'm not even sure, Brian, that this September 18th sentencing is going to go off, because there's a lot of one of the things the Supreme Court said in the opinion was that lower court should do a lot of fact-finding in order to determine whether something actually is or isn't an official act. And it may well be that he needs to have hearings on that subject. But let's see if it really happens.
Okay. But at the very least, they got a rule. I mean, could Merchant just simply say, I don't think so. I don't think it applies. Well, does he have to show his work?
As we've seen with Merchant, he could do whatever the hell he wants to do, right? I mean, he's the guy in the black robe. And I think if you're worried about the law, like if you're worried about being in reverse on appeal, you wouldn't have done a lot of things that Merchant did, including letting Stormy Daniels testify, which was utterly irrelevant to the case. But if you believe, like I believe, that this is entirely political and the purpose was to get Trump convicted prior to the 2024 election so that they could call him a convicted felon, then, Merchant, if he's driven by politics rather than law, then he's going to do whatever he's going to do.
So the 9/11 decision came down. And it looks like a plea deal has been cut. And the 9/11 hijack, the architects of the 9/11, the 9/11 attack are going to get life in prison, two of which are going to get some type of rehab because they were waterboarded, but they're going to spend life in prison, and they're not going to get the death penalty. Obviously, the families were not consulted on this. The president said he wasn't consulted on this. So your thoughts about this decision, being that you're the one who prosecuted the predecessor to these evildoers, and that's the blind sheikh and his cohorts.
Yeah, well, I appreciate the reference to that, Brian, but if I did anything that was valuable in that connection, it was to try to make the public case after the trial was over that civilian due process doesn't work against enemy combatants of foreign organizations or foreign countries that are at war with the United States. If you have a situation where you're at war, that means the national security of the country, our interest in that, require that the government win, right? And that makes sense to everyone, except if you then take those people and put them in the criminal justice system, our default in the justice system is that we'd rather see the government lose. That is, our boast in our criminal justice system is we would rather see guilty people go free than see a single innocent person wrongly convicted. Mm-hmm. And as a result, we tilt every single thing against the government and in the defendant's favor. That's the envy of the world, and it should be when you're dealing with domestic peacetime criminal justice. But you can't apply that to international threats that are national security threats in nature and that need to be fought by military and intelligence means, not law enforcement means. So the problem here all along has been we needed, at least in the assessment of the executive branch at the time, to go after these guys aggressively to get intelligence from them so that we could prosecute the war against Al-Qaeda and protect Americans. And that may be fine as far as it goes, but that makes those confessions inadmissible at any trial if it's actually going to be properly a trial. And you have the absurd situation where we know that, like, KSM was never going to be released, yet we would put him on trial and presume him innocent and pretend that, like, he didn't do it.
Right.
The government had to prove that he did. When he bragged that he did. You know, if you look at the 9/11 Commission report, almost all of the valuable information we have about Al-Qaeda in that report comes from KSM.
He subtly gave us information that led us to bin Laden. And because he talked about the courier and his face turned white when it came to the courier and that he's been picked up, what does he have to do with it? They realize this guy's an important guy. And the courier ends up going to the lair where bin Laden ultimately was. So it looks like they're going to spend the rest of their life in jail and they're going to close Gitmos, which means they're coming to our shores, right?
Well, I want to see the fine print of this. So all along, one of the holdups of this deal, I started writing about this deal probably over 2 years ago, but one of the holdups is the terrorists demanded that they be able to serve their time at Gitmo, which I always found to be precious because remember the lawyer left told us for years that Gitmo was the Bush gulag and that it needed to be closed. In the meantime, faced with the prospect of serving time in a place like the penitentiary at Florence, Colorado, where a lot of the terrorists are, The terrorist at Gitmo said, no, 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 we want to be at Gitmo. So one of the things they were trying to force was the government to agree that they get to serve their time there. If they made that agreement, I don't see how you close Gitmo.
Neither do I. Andy McCarthy, very educational. Thanks so much. Let's see if that talking point of 34 convictions goes away for Kamala Harris. It would be very interesting. Andy, thank you. And you could read his column about the long-dreaded 9/11 plea deal. Thanks so much. Back in a moment, Michael Whatley joins us, RNC chair.
Expanding your knowledge base. It's the Brian Kilmeade Show. If you're interested in it, Brian's talking about it. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
Trump, he has difficulties too. He's got to frame Harris. He's got to find the right message to go after her because, as Lucas said, we've got 101 days as of today, and he's got to get back in control of the dialogue. He is clearly in a subordinate role here. He feels uncomfortable with it, I suspect, and he likes being in the guy who's setting the tempo of the campaign, and that's not happening.
And that is Karl Rove's analysis. Is he correct? Let's ask Michael Whatley, co-chair of the RNC, fresh off one of the best conventions. It's conventional wisdom that's ever been done. Michael, things have changed so much since the last time I talked to you. And that was you're running against Joe Biden. You're not anymore.
No, we're not. But the fundamentals of this race are absolutely the same. I mean, Donald Trump needs to go out and tell every American voter why he is better than Kamala Harris. And we're assuming it's going to be Kamala Harris. I guess they're going to have a vote any day now. And we don't know who the vice president's going to be.
Right.
But look, at the end of the day, the fundamentals don't change because the American voters care about the southern border. They care about the economy. They care about our standing in the world. And President Trump outpolls Kamala on every single one of those issues
on
that
the issues.
Voters care about.
Now, keep in mind that she's done a very odd thing. I've heard of flip-flopping on one issue, but she flip-flopped on at least 12. She hasn't said it. She has had her campaign release it. Your thoughts on how to combat that?
Well, I think you just got to go toe-to-toe with it. Look, I mean, the thing about Donald Trump is
But she won't do an interview.
Yeah, which is amazing when you think about it. I mean, she's not done a single interview. Since this change, it's really remarkable. Look, Donald Trump's doing interviews. Donald Trump is going out there and having those conversations. He's talking directly to the American people. And he has done that better than any politician in generations. And that's what he needs to continue to do. That's why the rallies are so important. That's why he went to this big, you know, press conference deal in Chicago the other day
with
the black journalists. That's why he is doing rallies in Philly. That's why he's done, you know, rallies in Detroit, New York City. You know, he's willing to go talk to anybody, anywhere, anytime, and tell them what he's going to do to make America great again.
So, Michael, what do you think about what Karl said? Karl said, you got to get back on the offense.
Absolutely.
You know, because this obviously it makes you totally disjointed. You're running against someone so different, 59, not 81. Who can read a prompter. Your other opponent could not read a prompter, could not walk, could not function. Sadly, I think everyone agrees with that now. We all knew it. But now, how do you get back on the offensive when she's got the momentum of naming a running mate and the momentum of a DNC looming?
Well, we're going to play offense. That's what we do, you know, and I think that, you know, we saw the president go back to Pennsylvania with that big rally that he did in Harrisburg. He's going to be with J.D. Vance down in Atlanta on Saturday. You know, up in Minnesota, they did a rally. They turned away more people than they let into the arena. That was overwhelming in terms of the turnout that was going to be there. You know, he is going to focus on the battleground states that we need to focus on, and he's going to focus on the messaging, right? At the end of the day, this thing comes down to, you know, strengthening the southern border, securing our economy, and securing our standing in the world. And on every single one of those issues, he's polling better than Kamala Harris.
So 2 weeks ago, Kamala Harris was saying, I'm not the border czar. This week, she's saying, I'm a great border czar. Listen to this.
I went after transnational gangs, drug cartels, and human traffickers that came into our country illegally. I prosecuted them in case after case, and I won. Donald Trump, on the other hand, has been talking a big game about securing our border, but he does not walk the walk.
Donald Trump had the most secure southern border in the history of this country. Kamala Harris led the effort to 94 different executive actions to dismantle that southern border and invite 10 million illegal immigrants to come across it. The scourge of fentanyl. We have twice as many fentanyl deaths in this country as we did 4 years ago. You look at migrant crime, all of them through the roof. For her to try a revisionist history approach on the border issue is absolutely Orwellian, and I think it's not going to fly. There's no way the American people can see what Biden and Harris have done with her as the borders are to open up this border and bring across that invasion of the southern border. It's remarkable that she would ever want to try and talk on this.
It is remarkable, but the whole thing's remarkable. No fracking, now I'm for fracking. No offshore drilling, now I'm for offshore drilling. Cops don't make you safe, now I need cops. Defund ICE, now I don't believe we should defund ICE. How do you deal with someone, because you do this, you're a politician too, before you ran the RNC. How do you deal with someone who changes before your eyes?
You just have to call it out, and you've got to go have that conversation.
How much pressure on you to get the ads out?
Well, the ads are up. I mean, we were up with our first ads already. You know, we made a $50 million buy this week, and we're not going to come down before the election cycle. We have more than enough resources to get our message out to every American voter and every American family to go out there and have this conversation. But, you know, at some point, we want to have debates. At some point, she's got to talk to reporters, and she's got to be able to answer questions on these types of issues.
Last issue. You know, when the conventions go up, usually the other side goes low. What are you guys going to do?
We're going to go play offense. I'm going to be up in Chicago. I know we'll have a number. Oh, yeah. We're going to have a number of folks that are going to be up there bracketing and talking about it. The level of flip-flopping that we're seeing right now is absolutely staggering. And the fact is Donald Trump leads on every issue poll that matters to the American people. That's why we're winning in every battleground state and why we're winning the national polls.
You know, I'm just reading about her. Do you know she's firmly for sanctuary cities? I mean, in 2016, that might have been a decent angle. That's radioactive now.
It is. And she also led the charge to dismantle the most secure southern border and invite those folks across the line.
And showed up one time in a sanitized border. Michael Whatley, fascinating time. It's going to be a sprint over the next 90 plus days. Thanks so much.
Yeah, thanks, Brian.
From the Fox News radio studios in Midtown Manhattan, it's the fastest growing radio talk show. Brian Kilmeade.
Wow, what a week it's been. I'm so glad you're here. The President of the United States had to work for a day, and he did get hostages back, so he's going to go rest in Delaware. The Vice President is going to be naming her Vice President or Vice Presidential nominee shortly. And we know the former President's going to be teaming up with J.D. Vance tomorrow night. How do I know that? Because I'm live tomorrow on One Nation, 9 o'clock Eastern, to recap the President's appearance in Atlanta, Georgia. Karl Rove at the bottom of the hour. And, of course, Ariel Lightstone's going to be with us. Shortly served as a senior advisor to Ambassador David Friedman for 4 years during the Trump years in Israel, of course, in Jerusalem. Let's get to the big three.
Now, with the stories you need to know, it's Brian's Big Three.
Number three.
We weren't allowing this boxer to compete in our events. I find it remarkable how the IOC apply a different condition to this event. I feel disappointed for the Italian boxer because she's worked extremely hard.
Yeah, I do too. Chris Roberts, CEO of International Boxing Association, can't believe the Olympics let a biological male who evidently is intersex, I'll try to explain that later, fight a woman. And she just quit after four punches. Said it was felt it through her nose to the back of her head. And guess what? There's another one from Taiwan fighting today. And this guy or this woman's going to be fighting a woman on Saturday. Why can't the Olympics straighten this out? Track and field did. Most other sports did. But boxing suffering.
Number two.
Well, they're the weird ones, and if you've ever seen her with the laugh and everything else, that's a weird deal going on there. They're the weird ones. Nobody's ever called me weird. I'm a lot of things, but weird I'm not. JD is not.
Yeah, the campaign continues to focus on the VP, Harris, and of course she's focusing on calling Donald Trump weird. As she zeroes in on a running mate, and Trump team focuses on a winning message in a target-rich environment.
Number one.
It will be joyous tonight. There's no more joyous moment than reuniting those folks with their families, and I am thrilled for those folks who are coming home. But what you can see now is the Biden administration has done it wrong.
That is Mike Pompeo. Monster prison swap. We get back innocent. Russians get back killers and criminals. I celebrate the return, but fear for the next wave of innocent Americans captured next time Vladimir Putin wants to do it. Ari Lightstone knows all about foreign policy and difficult situations. That's what he spends most of his time, and every day in Israel is a bit of a challenge. Aria, welcome back.
Thank you, Brian.
So the President of the United States hears that Haniyeh has been killed thanks to a bomb that's been placed there months ago at a guest house. I guess they anticipated where he would stay. And when he's in town in Tehran for the inauguration, he dies. President Biden says that's not helpful. What do you say?
Well, I think anytime somebody who perpetrated the murders of countless Israelis and Americans during the Second Intifada in the early 2000s, and as the political head of an organization that caused the greatest massacre of the Jews since the Holocaust on October 7th, which includes the murder of 45 Americans and 8 Americans still kept hostage, anything other than being thrilled that that guy is no longer on this planet is the incorrect reaction.
Right. And by the way, this is not a good guy. He's not a diplomat just because he wears a suit and stays at the Four Seasons. Could you tell me about Islam Haniyeh, now dead?
Yeah, well, the best part about his bio right now is that he is now dead. For the last, it doesn't matter how you look at this guy. He's a terrible guy. He died worth $4 billion. He doesn't have a business. He's not an entrepreneur. He didn't come up with an app. He stole that money from you and from me and from Western taxpayers. And he stole it from us on the premise that he was going to give Palestinians a better life. He did not. He runs a criminal enterprise, and that criminal enterprise is called Hamas. And the way they gain popularity is by murdering Americans and Israelis and other Westerners. And this is the business he's been in for better than 30 years. Here's a guy, I mean, it's a corporation. He's risen through the ranks to come up to be the number one person. And a lot of people credit he achieved the goal of being the number one person purely through survival. So he's made it this long. He's stolen $4 billion. And he was the person who is at least partially, I won't say 100%, but let's say 50% responsible for the massacre and the continued hostage holding of Israelis and Americans since October 7th.
So their point is, who do we negotiate with now? That's not your problem. But Sinwar was pulling the strings anyway from the bowels of Gaza, telling him what to do, feeling empowered because of the separation between the U.S. and Israel all of a sudden.
Yeah, and classically, the media describes Haniyeh as moderate, a force for fulfilling the ceasefire negotiations. And this is just the most gregarious lie, audacious lie that the media can tell. Exactly like you said, because he puts on a suit and tie, people think that he's wonderful. He's not. He is a criminal who's stolen from his own people and continues to enforce the terrible things that are happening. Now, what does Sinwar do from here? I think this is a very powerful message to Sinwar or anybody else who takes Haniyeh's seat. Israel will find you. Israel will take revenge if you try to harm Jews.
So this Hezbollah leader, commander, taken out basically in his apartment building, how is that being interpreted in Lebanon, where the Hezbollah is located, headquarters?
So on a practical basis, this is far more significant than killing Haniyeh. Haniyeh is sort of the CEO of the organization called Hamas, but he's not the on-the-ground commander. The fellow who was killed in Beirut, the capital of Lebanon, is the on-the-ground commander for Hezbollah in Lebanon. And to attack him in Beirut and to be able to eliminate him in Beirut is a meaningful difference to the chain of command of the operational military authority of Hezbollah. And it was an enormous strike against them based upon the killing of those 12 children just 1 week ago in the Golan Heights.
So now we're waiting for a response. And they said you could be hit by 7 different entities: Islamic Jihad, Hamas, Hezbollah, Iran itself, the Houthi rebels, for example, locations in Syria, in Lebanon, as well as the Gaza Strip, as well as Iran. What's the conventional wisdom say you'll be hit back?
So it's a good question. I mean, right now there's an anticipation that at the very least there will be a replication of what happened on April 13th, which is when you had 300 missiles and ballistic weapons, including drones sent from Iran to Israel. The big fear or the big concern, I don't want to say fear, Israel knew when it hit 3 of these terror leaders, again, within 24 hours, one in Beirut, the capital of Lebanon, one in Tehran, the capital of Iran, one in Damascus, the capital of Syria, they knew that there would be repercussions. I'd like to believe that they have gamed that out. But it's a game of high-stakes poker. They put all their chips to the middle of the table, and they better be right on the cards that they're holding. And more importantly, they better be right on the cards that the enemy is holding. What is important for the listeners to know, when I spoke to my family in Israel just a half an hour ago, everybody is prepared for the worst, but hoping for the best. And what I mean by that is these seven entities that are threatening to attack Israel, you know what they've been doing since October 7th? They've been attacking Israel. There is no, there's been no pause. There's been no respite. And they didn't need an excuse. On October 6th, there was a ceasefire. On October 7th, Israel was attacked from all of these seven entities. Tomorrow might not be any different.
All right, I want to bring you to comments that really ticked off Prime Minister Netanyahu and his cabinet. This is Kamala Harris after meeting with the Prime Minister last week.
The images of dead children and desperate, hungry people fleeing for safety, sometimes displaced for the second, third, or fourth time. We cannot look away in the face of these tragedies. We cannot allow ourselves to become numb to the suffering, and I will not be silent.
So what was really upsetting, do you think, of Netanyahu, the prime minister? Why do you think he was so upset?
Yeah, the United States of America is the world superpower, and the leader of the United States of America is the authority of that country. There is no doubt that every child that dies in Gaza is a tragedy. There is no doubt that every civilian that dies in Gaza is a tragedy. What is should also not be in doubt that every one of those deaths is Hamas's fault. Hamas has told you, Haniyeh, the fellow who was just killed, claimed over and over that the job of Palestinian civilians is to die to protect the Palestinian fighters in order to cause the world media to come up in uproar. And as Bibi Netanyahu said in his speech in Congress, those people who think otherwise are the Iranian useful idiots. And what Kamala Harris became in her speech was an Iranian useful idiot, blaming Israel for the deaths of the civilians that Hamas is deliberately putting in harm's way.
So I guess we really can't expect much, because all they're thinking about is November. And if there's raging, there's a raging war in Gaza at the time, they're going to lose Michigan because they get blamed. There are also going to be a huge Palestinian protest in Chicago. Where's this coming from? And can, I know there's been reports, but do you think this is being financed by outside sources?
Yeah, of course it's being financed by outside sources. It took a long time for the United States of America to realize that. But look at the funding that goes into our universities. This is not a yesterday problem. This is going on 25 years. If somebody 25 years ago went to a fancy university party and stood up and said that there's no place for African Americans in our university, that person would be picked up and thrown out of the room, as would be appropriate for somebody who says something so reprehensible. That same person, if they were to stand up and say, there's no place for a state of Israel on this map, that person would be made the university president. And once we've gone ahead and changed the viewpoint in this liberal bastion of these ivory towers, you've enabled this group to be able to be out there in full force. The irony is, all the speeches from the Senate, all the speeches from the Congress did nothing to stop these campus riots. The heroes of stopping the campus riots were the frat boys from the University of North Carolina.
And they were at the RNC. I want you to hear what President Trump said yesterday with Mornings with Maria, Cut 19.
I did the Abraham Accords. Nobody realizes we would have had peace all over the Middle East. I think I would have gotten Iran into the Abraham Accords. You want to know the truth? They were dying to make a deal. Iran was broke. And then now they're a very wealthy country. They have $300 billion in cash. But Iran was broke. They would have made a deal, but Biden blew it as usual. They are the worst. Look, he's the worst president in the history of our country, and she's a big part of it.
So I don't know about Iran and the Abraham Accords. Have you? I mean, you were on the inside with that. What does he mean?
But he means that there are two different ways that the Middle East can go. The Middle East can go towards the future, or the Middle East can relitigate the past. What the Abraham Accords did was set aside a part of the region that would be filled with peacefulness and prosperity, where they would align for security concerns. And these are all American allies, the UAE, Bahrain, Morocco, certainly the state of Israel, working together to create a better future. Then you've got the backwards thinkers. And this goes chief and foremost Iran, but Gaza, the Palestinian Authority, Hezbollah, etc. And what President Trump was saying was, if you built on that momentum, if you created a circle of peace, other countries would want to join us. And this is what Americans don't understand well enough. The Iranian people are fantastic. The Iranian people want to be part of that circle of peace. The unfortunate reality for the Iranian people is that they are held captive by the worst leaders on this planet, with a close competition to the Palestinian leadership. They will join. The people will join.
And your greatest hope, are there people you can deal with on the Palestinian side?
Absolutely, but nowhere near the leadership. The people that are proposed are the most corrupt criminal people you could possibly imagine. But there are brave, strong, courageous Palestinians and brave, strong, courageous Iranians who would want to build a different future, and it's our job to do that.
What about Barghadi? A lot of people point to him. He's been in prison for decades. Yeah, and do you think that he might be a moderate voice?
No, I don't think that he would be a moderate voice. I think the voices that we think that can come out and lead are voices that neither you nor I traditionally know today. It's not going to be somebody who's part of the system. It's not going to be somebody who comes out of the Israeli prison system. It's likely going to be somebody who spent the last 10 years learning in the United Arab Emirates what it's like to be a leader who pushes their people forward instead of holding them back. It could be somebody who's doing the same thing in Saudi or Morocco.
All right, Ariel Lightstone, thanks so much. It's one of those times I think I'm going to have you back as we gauge the reprisals from those brilliant Israeli attacks. Thanks, Aria.
Thank you, Brian.
All right, listen, we come back. I'll take your calls, 1-866-408-7669. Not just about this, the hostage swap. Are you comfortable with it? We're also talking about President Trump, the strategy that you would deploy. Got to really think about this. Can't just say, oh, she's terrible, she's awful, she's this. Sam, okay, what is, just tell me what it is. Tell me a strategy. Can't have everything. Target-rich environment. What's the one that's going to work? And not with you, you're sold. But how about what's going to work with the independents that you know, the undecideds that you know, the Democrats that are turned off by the last 4 years? Don't move. Brian Kilmeade Show.
Coming to you on a need-to-know basis, because man, do you need to know. It's Brian Kilmeade. Radio that makes you think. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
It's just been an amazing shift. Doesn't mean it's going to be easy. And I think the message we've been telling everyone is, look, we're excited. Voter turnout is going to be stronger. But in swing states, independent voters are critical. And you just don't win on Democrats alone in any of these swing states. So we're going to have to inform people, educate people, make that case to independent voters, which is a very typical election in a place like Michigan.
Right. Let's see how what that goes, because we have a brand new message and we have a brand new record for a woman that is well-defined. We thought, she went underground, really had no policies when she was vice president, considered one of the most unpopular, ineffective presidents, kind of a joke. And now everyone are making her out to be Eva Braun or Indira Gandhi. A lot of people are calling, a lot of people are writing. Here, I got this email from Robbie. Robbie says, Brian, you need a psychiatrist. Have you heard of enabling? Psychiatrists say people who enable other sicker people are this is exactly what you're doing. It's a dumpster fire. The man is controlled by the devil, meaning Donald Trump. All right. That wasn't from a friendly person, but that's okay. Gulags. Brian, remember many innocent J6er prisoners still in USA gulags without trials, due process. Yes, that's true. There's a lot of people. If you attacked a cop, you should stay where you are. If you didn't, if you just walk through, you should get some justice. Richard says maybe the J6ers waved into the Capitol, did nothing wrong. That is true. You're talking about what came up again at the Council of Black Journalists. Hey, Paul, you listen to WPTF in North Carolina. Hey, Paul.
Hey, Brian. Great show. Love it. And what I wanted to tell the Trump campaign is do not accept any changes that come in Harris policies through press releases. Just ignore them and keep hammering her actual audio and speeches where she outlines her real views.
You're right. Forget about heritage, right?
Right. Yeah. Just stick to the policies and then keep outlining your plan on the economy like Trump did at the journalist thing the other day. He said you've got to lower energy costs to lower inflation. And that's really important that he keeps hammering that.
Thanks so much for the call. So I got this very long. Yeah, I'm going to paraphrase it. This is from Randy. Randy says this. George Patton said was an incredible general and always thought he was reincarnated. I didn't believe it. However, look at the similarities between Patton and Trump. Neither of them is willing to cede an inch from the enemy. Patton once stood his ground while being strafed by German planes and fires. Instead of ducking, he stood and pointed his pearl handle revolver at the plane as it roared overhead, shooting at him. Can you see the same with Trump? Yeah, okay. I don't think reincarnation, but there is a similarity. Bryce, WOSH 1490 in Wisconsin. Bryce.
I kind of have a statement and then a question. So my statement is, we saw Kamala Harris for the first time yesterday kind of go off script.
Yes.
Without a teleprompter, and she was talking in circles. My question is when are Democrats going to get rid of this falsehood that she is qualified to be president?
I hear you. She's got a resume, but she doesn't have accomplishments. Bryce, good point. She can read, forget about being dumb or smart. She can read a teleprompter. I don't care that she failed the bar the first time. A lot of great people failed the bar the first time. But when it comes to understanding policy and putting the work in, that's where she falls short. Yesterday, you're talking about when the hostages came home, when the prisoner swap happened. She couldn't get a sentence out. She even screwed up the eulogy yesterday.
Breaking news, unique opinions. Hear it all on the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Can I tell you, I don't care. Let them do whatever. They still want to have open borders. If she picks Shapiro, she's going to lose the Palestinian vote. Everybody has their liabilities. I think if she picks Shapiro, who happens to be Jewish, she loses her little Palestinian base because they like me because they think I'm going to bring peace to the Middle East, even though I'm very strong for Israel. Israel loves me. But, you know, a lot of the Arab states like me, too, because you know what they want to see? They want to see peace.
So that was President Trump talking to Maria a short time ago. The president does want to know who he's up against, does not know the team yet. Karl Rove joins us, former deputy chief of staff for George W. Bush, Fox News contributor, best-selling author. Karl, so do you think that Shapiro would be the most formidable for Harris?
You know, he'd be formidable, yes. I think Kelly would be formidable as well in a different way. My sense is that the Harris campaign is narrowly focused on Pennsylvania. And while they, realize that, it's the biggest of the six battleground states. And while they know that there's a lot of evidence that a running mate only has marginal impact in a state, they're hoping that the marginal impact would be enough to move Pennsylvania into their column.
But the downside would be?
Well, first of all, he's only been governor for a couple of years. There's a lot of there's a lot of buzz about him because he's a very popular governor and is in a deeply divided state, which he's got like a 61% favorable rating, and he's a more moderate traditional Democrat. He's not a progressive. So, look, vice presidential candidates come into focus with an intense focus when they're named, because even if they're well known in their own state, they're not well known in the country, and how they handle that initial period of time has a big impact on their favorability and in essence reflects on the person who chose him. It's the first presidential decision any candidate for president makes. And so, there'll be a lot of attention on it, and how he handles himself in that initial stage will have an impact on how people view him, but more importantly on how they view Harris.
True. Do you think that Andy Beshear is a head fake?
Well, I think they like talking about he and Cooper because it would indicate, look, she's not a far left winger, despite her many statements and views, because she's considering two relatively moderate Southern governors. But yeah, I think Andy Beshear was a reach. I mean, look, he's got an interesting record. Here's a guy who's run and won twice as governor in a deep red state. But, he's not a Midwesterner. He's a border state governor. And this thing is going to be decided in three Sunbelt states, Nevada, Arizona, and Georgia. And more importantly, three Great Lakes Midwestern states, Wisconsin, Michigan, and Pennsylvania.
Karl Rove, our guest. So we'll see what happens in the next 2 days. The way I look at it, there's going to be a lot of momentum for the Democrats just by the calendar. The DNC will be momentum, and picking a running mate is momentum. Getting a new candidate is momentum. Getting away from a bad candidate is momentum. So you came out and said they have to change the dialogue, get back on offense. I played your clip for Jason Miller, and here's what Jason Miller's head of communications with Trump. Here's what he said.
So I would disagree with his framing. I would very much encourage
Carl, to tune in and watch President Trump's rallies, and also to tune in and pay attention to what President Trump is saying on social media, whether that's on Truth Social or on different platforms that the campaign is communicating from. Kamala Harris is dangerously liberal. So it's a very clear message that's coming from the president, from J.D. Vance, and from us. And I will drop a note or a text message to Carl after this interview to make sure, because I had not heard that clip exactly, to make sure that he knows exactly what we're doing.
Well, I read the Truth Social messages, and I watch the rally speeches and so forth. And look, they are doing, in my opinion, as I put in my column yesterday, they have a very effective ad on immigration. But you need to, you know, ads only go so far. The low information voters who are still out there, and the swing voters, the undecided voters, they're a relatively small group of them, less than 10% of the electorate, but they play a disproportionate role in deciding the outcome of the contest. And you have to take an ad, as effective as that ad is, which has her on camera and is very factual and very powerful, you need to reinforce it. And when the president, the former president, stands up at a rally and talks for 60 minutes and is ranging across a wide front, people are not going to be paying attention to the message you want to drive home on that day. And if you put up that ad, the most effective way to make certain that that ad gets driven home is to have the candidate focused on the same subject and limit their remarks. Better to, for him to stand up in front of an audience of, you know, thousands of people and say, I want to introduce, you know, somebody you may not have heard of, whose family was the victims of a migrant crime. Or I want to introduce a mayor of a border town who's dealing with this. I want you to listen to what he has to say about what the effect on our country of these 10 million illegal immigrants coming across the border. And then drive that message home by saying, the Biden administration, the Biden-Harris administration has failed. She was in charge of supposedly getting to the root cause of illegal immigration. And in return for her efforts, we got a record number of people. Nobody ever came close. And when I get in there, here's some four things or five things I'm going to do to stop it. And that would be far more powerful than going to the National Association of Black Journalists and questioning whether she's Indian American or Black American. I mean, that's what the president's true social messages have been focused on the last day. That's what his visit to the National Association of Black Journalists was all about. And as a result, it's overwhelmed the message that actually matters. Those questions of is she Indian American or Black American? Well, she's actually Indian American and Black American. I live in the state of Texas, where the most rapidly growing part of the population are people who identify with more than one ethnicity. And so, you know, pay attention to the things that really matter. And, you know, we got a 90 some odd days left in this contest. And the Harris campaign so far has been surprisingly disciplined. Now, they can't maintain that for all the rest of the campaign. They're going to have their time in the barrel as well. And we'll see how they handle it. But, you know, you got to stay on message. And the message is not, oh, she's Indian American, or
I agree with you.
Women, yeah, or women who don't have children are somehow less worthy than people, than women who do have children. I mean, those are the two biggest messages of the Trump Vance campaign for the last week.
Yeah, not good, and easily fixable. So for her, I would give her accolades if she did interviews. And at the same time, the message stayed clear, and she would explain the flip-flop on fracking, offshore drilling, border security. She's now saying not only is she a border czar, but she's strong on the border, which is fascinating. That she's also sanctuary. He was pro-sanctuary city when she was a DA and AG. So that's not going to fly anymore. And then now she was for the new Green Deal. She was for getting rid of private insurance. So she's changed all that through releases to newspapers and media organizations. She hasn't even said this. So I'd give her credit for reading the prompter, but I want you to hear her without a prompter. When the prisoner swap happened, she went to a camera. Cut five.
Very good night, and it's testament to the work that we prioritize under Joe Biden's leadership in our administration, which is the importance of building alliances, building the strength that we have through diplomacy to have outcomes like this. And there's so much at stake right now in our country and in this upcoming election, including who has which approach to understanding America's strength.
So we'll see how that goes. Will she take any questions about anything like this?
I doubt it. And incidentally, you left off of your list one of the more astonishing ones. Here was a woman who said, we have to reimagine the ICE and start fresh. And now she's saying, I'm a supporter of the Border Patrol and ICE. So you're right. But again, how do you flip that? How do you deal with it? There are two ways to go at it. One is to say she's a flip-flopper, which she is. But more importantly is to say, in my opinion, is to say, well, glad that in the, 96 days before the election and nearly 4 years after she took office, she's finally changed. And 5 years after she said it, she's changed her mind. But she's not trustworthy. She's doing this only because of politics. You got to explain why. It's not just enough to say flip-flopper. Remember, the people who are up for grabs in this election, they distrust all politicians. That's why the attack that the Harris campaign is leveling at Trump and Vance, that they're weird, that doesn't work. Because remember, the people who are up for grabs think all politicians are weird. And they think all politicians are flip-floppers. You've got to get to something deeper, and the deeper is she knows she's wrong on this issue. She's been bad on this issue for 4 years as vice president. She's bad on this issue for 5 years as a candidate for president and then as vice president, and she's wrong on the issue, and keep driving it home.
So no one's ever done anything like this. I don't think flipped on 13, 15 issues. She's coming through. She's actually admitting by doing this that the policies that they've had in place for the last 3 years are remarkably unpopular, and she will do the exact opposite. And what she's done in her career does not work, is not popular, so she'll do the exact opposite. It's pretty amazing to think that you supposedly believe the American people are so repulsed, for you to get elected, you have to change your opinion on what you've done.
Yeah. Yeah. And put it in the political sphere. She's doing this for politics only. She doesn't care deeply about the issue of border security. She's doing what she thinks is necessary to get elected. Now, again, remember, there's a lot of feeling among the voters who are yet to be, line up in a camp that all politicians do this. But that's why it's important to say, here's where she and I differ, and here's what I'm going to do. And I'm drawing to my camp people who are, you and I were there. One of the most powerful set of moments were these ordinary Americans who stood up.
Yep.
The woman who lost her son to fentanyl, the brother who lost his sister to a rapist and a murderer, who at the end of his speech at the convention said he hoped that the man who raped and murdered his sister would be able to find Christ before, his judgment. And then that woman from New York who set the place on fire talking about how her son was stabbed by an illegal immigrant. Those kind of people will help frame this up in an emotional, powerful way that cause ordinary Americans to say, you know what, Donald Trump stands with those people and I stand with those people because we all agree on something. We need to secure the border. And, fine to say Truth Social and fine to say rallies, but you need to have a structure to this to drive home the message to people who are yet up for grabs. And say what you will about Harris, she's been remarkably disciplined in the last couple of weeks, and I think that's why this race has closed again. Now, can she maintain it? We don't know, because you're right. I mean, what happens when she gets outside of the teleprompter, and what happens when she gets in front of tough questions? Now, she will have an advantage if she does interviews, and that is the dominant media are desperate for her. I mean, you just look at the glowing coverage that she's had the last couple of weeks, and it's clear the media, they're thrilled that Joe Biden stepped aside, and they will do everything they can to put her in a good light.
In a way that you didn't even have to confront. I thought you had a much more fair press than Trump's dealing with right now.
Oh, yeah. No, it's just, yes, there was Bush derangement syndrome, but it was not as widespread as the media today and what they face when they faced Donald Trump.
And the thing is, Carl, here's the thing. The Trump issues that he ran on and governed on are actually hotter today than they are when he was president. So I think that so when you say, I don't want to go back, a lot of people, she should change that line. Because a lot of people are saying, no, I do want to go back. Not to the 50s, just to 4 years prior to this.
Yeah. Well, and also, you know, and she started, she has moved away from the theme that the Democrats were using much of this year, which is he's a threat to democracy. Well, you know, look, I'm a huge, I have very strong feelings about what happened on January 6th when people brutalized Capitol Police. But let's be honest, a lot of people look at what Joe Biden attempted to do, spending hundreds of billions of dollars of our money as a political giveaway to students, to young voters, by saying, I'm going to do what the law doesn't allow me to do, and when the courts are going to slap me down on it, but I'm going to try and give away hundreds of millions of dollars in debt relief, college loan debt relief. And why? They were explicit about it. They told the reporters, we're in trouble with young voters, and we think if we can give them some debt relief on their student loans, we might get their vote. I mean, talk about bread and circuses, a return to Rome, you know, imperial Rome. But she's got a challenge, too. She's got to find a way to paint a vision of what her future looks like that is going to be able to move her beyond where she is. She has moved largely because people who are Democrat leaners or Democrat loyalists, young voters, Hispanic voters, and Black voters, said he is too old. He's not up to the job, and I'm unenthusiastic or I'm turned off. And she has re-energized them, but there's going to be a limit to how far that's going to take her. And again, she has the same problem. She's got to focus on the undecided and weakly linked voters who are low information. They spend very little time in politics. They will pay more attention the closer we get to the election. And they need to have the message drilled home time and time and time again. And so far, her message has been, hey, Democrats who were disappointed with Joe Biden, I'm here and I'm leading our ticket. I'm showing some energy and I can string together two sentences. And they're responding by upping her numbers.
Yep. They have
there's
a lot of
limit to that.
Yeah, there is. And it's going to end at the DNC. But there's going to be a counter protest at the DNC that could overwhelm it.
Yeah.
We'll see what they can do. Karl Rove, thanks so much.
You bet. Thank you.
Have a great weekend. 1-866-408-7669. We'll come back. We'll take some of the calls on the other end and go over some more things, including this horrible situation in Olympic boxing for women. Don't move.
Hear the ins and outs of the 2024 election right here. The Brian Kilmeade Show. The fastest 3 hours in radio. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
These athletes, boxers, are entirely eligible. They are women on their passport. They have competed for many years. And I actually think it's not helpful to start stigmatizing people who take part in sport like this.
Yeah, Mark Adams, he is the IOC spokesperson. Not helpful? Yeah, you're not getting punched in the face by a guy. These are professional boxers, women boxers. That's what they do. 8 hours a day, five, six, 7 days a week. And they're saying, no one hits like this. I'm out. So the Italian just bows out. She said it was her dream, wanted to honor her father's death. She won a medal, but now she's done. She quits after four punches. And now this Algerian who calls himself intersexual, whatever's going down below his waist, I'm not sure. But to me, this is not fair. You got to think about the women first. If you're born with some type of thing that's going on that allows you to have an advantage over somebody else, I'm sorry, international competition's got standards, and you're not part of the standards. Today, a Taiwanese male who's a female, same intersex issues, will be fighting again in the women's side. And then August 3rd, I think in the knockout, in the next round, you'll see this Algerian again. Today, Yu Ting-Lun of Taiwan beat a fighter from Uzbekistan by unanimous 5-0 decision. So a male who says a female, whose passport says she's a female, advances.
From high atop Fox News headquarters in New York City, always seeking solutions, never sowing division. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Everyone, welcome. I hope you had a fantastic week. As usual, we have a breakneck pace in terms of news. The velocity is tremendous. This hour, we'll be joined by Julie Banderas, getting set to host Outnumbered. And then we have Bill McGurn right here in studio, Fox News contributor, member of the Wall Street Journal editorial board, and writes the weekly Main Street column here on Tuesdays, and former chief speechwriter for George W. Bush. I get to see him in the halls often. Bill, welcome back.
Thanks, Brian. Good to be here.
First off, in terms of good news, you have some good news.
Oh, great news about Evan Gershkovich coming back to the Journal. Everyone is thrilled. Plus, the other fellow, the Marine, Paul, he's being free too. It's always, look, the way I have vested interest as a journalist to see one of my colleagues come home. But I think it's always a good day when a fellow American who's unjustly held abroad comes home and tastes free air again.
Here is President Biden. Cut one.
The deal that made this possible was a feat of diplomacy and friendship. Friendship. Multiple countries helped get this done. They joined a difficult, complex negotiations at my request. And I personally thank them all again. And I've thanked them personally, and I'll thank them again.
So Paul Whelan was held. They said, okay, I'll give you Paul Whelan back, a Marine. Take him for no reason. He was there for 5 years. He goes, I'll give you Paul Whelan. I just need that killer that we have in Germany. And they said,
assassin.
The assassin. And he said, "What? Well, you can't do that. That's not even." And next thing you know, they take Evan Gershkovich. And he knew it. He was covering what was going on with Vladimir Putin taking Western journalists and possibly somebody of equal weight of the assassin he wants back. So he ends up being the target of all this.
Yeah. I mean, look, this
you have a detailed account of the Wall Street Journal.
Yeah. This is a common MO by dictators. You know, they grab an innocent person and they use that as leverage to get a guilty person on their side out of prison and return home. So it's kind of a one-way street, and that's a danger. I think the Biden administration did a good job in the negotiations. I take the president at his word when he said they were complicated because the number of nations involved. I think that was very hard to pull off. I'm glad to see these men free. But we have to ask, what are the precedents we're setting or abetting, and what is the price for getting our people free?
Yeah, and that's what John Bolton said. Cut 11.
We're all happy for the people released from Russian jails. But let's be clear. This was a bad deal. It sets a bad precedent. It violates a rule too often violated that we don't swap for innocent American hostages. It's going to lay the groundwork for more Americans being used as bargaining chips. And it's happy for the individuals and their families, of course, but this is bad for the country.
Yeah, I mean, it's hostage taking as long as we've had international relations. Got it. Understood it. But there's a reason why they don't take Russian and Chinese hostages.
Right.
Because they'll say, no, number one, we're going to kill you, and we don't really care what happens to our people.
Right. I mean, the way to stop this, you know, once you're in the deal, once some guy's in jail and you're trying to get him out, you're kind of stuck with the conditions that you inherited. But as you say, the real problem is we're making it more attractive to take innocent Americans abroad, like Evan, who is just doing his job, and get some political goal or strategic goal that they want by using them as bargaining chips. The real way, and that's why one thing I was disappointed in President Biden, at the end of his little remarks yesterday, he was asked, you know, what are you going to do to address this perverse incentive to take Americans, innocent Americans, hostage? And he said, well, we have to get the news out. We advise Americans don't go to these places. Well, I think that's, you know, certainly Americans should have the knowledge of what's going on in the countries. There are State Department advisories. But I would like to have seen a statement like there'll be consequences if you molest an American abroad. I guess the president couldn't say it because there have been no consequences.
Zero. And they got 8 Americans still in Russia,
right.
One of which is a school teacher. Unbelievable. All right, so Bill McGurn is here, The Wall Street Journal. Bill's got a rich political background. And Donald Trump sat down and did something what Kamala Harris isn't doing. She's not doing any interviews, just speeches. Now she's going to have the momentum of barnstorming with a running mate in the matter of a couple of days. Then she's going to have the benefit of the DNC. What do you think, what has Kamala Harris's candidacy, how do you label, what is the reason for this transformation with her from one of the most ridiculed, unaccomplished vice presidents in history? Now they want everyone to believe that she is the future.
She's running against Donald Trump. You know, up till about 2 months ago, the general wisdom was that no one was a worse candidate in 2019-2020 for president than Kamala Harris. She started out with like 35 million black women from a big state, and she just belly flopped. She started strong in the first debate, if you remember, Democratic primary debate, and she basically called Joe Biden a racist, I think. But by the second debate, Biden was prepared, and even Biden beat her by just pushing back, and she couldn't do it. That's why I think
Tulsi Gabbard destroyed her.
Right. That's why I think the answer for Donald Trump now, the media is totally in the bag for it. They're not even going to say, why aren't you having press conferences or interviews?
Can you believe that? What is the media for if you don't want to ask a question?
Well, the media sees itself as there for defeating Donald Trump. So they're doing the
more
job.
Than for George Bush.
Yeah.
More than John McCain. So, more than Mitt Romney. Yes?
Yeah, I think so. And so they're not going to do anything. So if you look at the last couple of events, we had the disastrous debate performance. Then we had Donald Trump getting shot. And then we had Joe Biden dropping out and Kamala
RNC.
Kamala replacing him. So I think the only way for Donald Trump to burst through this narrative, this coronation, which is not just by the Democrats, it's by the whole media and everything, this coronation is a debate where the American people can see, as they did in the last debate, how the candidates stack up under pressure. And I'm not sure Kamala Harris can survive that.
So let's see about the debate. It's supposed to be September 10th. Here's what Trump said this morning to Maria. Cut 17.
I want to. And we're leading in the polls, it seems, by quite a bit still. She's better than he is, but I think ultimately she'll be worse than him. She's more radical than him. He was a phony. She is also, but she's not a phony in terms of policy. She actually wants open borders. She actually wants to defund the police. To me, when you say open borders, defund the police, you don't have to go into the rest of it. But you're going to have tremendously high energy prices. She doesn't want any fossil fuels, which will destroy the country, frankly.
But she's changed her position on this through her staff. She hasn't said this.
Right. It's all like, never mind. You know, what I said in all 2019, 2020, it doesn't matter. It's incredible. But I think that it'd be good to run ads quoting from those statements. But I think it's not going to make up for Donald Trump directly addressing it in a debate, putting her on the spot and seeing how she squares that circle, how she answers the claims that she's no longer for these positions that she passionately took earlier.
Right. And it's just amazing, too, Bill. There's a story to be written. How was she so ready to go the day that he left? Why did she have all these events immediately lined up? How do they know to change to certain phrases and stop with the democracy and talk more about weird and talk more about freedom? Where do these themes come from? She wasn't supposed to be running for another 4 years. I'm wondering who put the knife in the back and was she a part of it? I'm very curious where that story goes. Are you curious too?
I'm curious. I'm not sure she's involved in it. I mean, from the Joe Biden's perspective, before he dropped out, I thought he's going to stay. But from his point of view in the White House, it must have looked suspicious for everyone, must have looked suspicious to him. He knows Barack Obama and his people are pushing for him to get out. I think Bill Clinton and Hillary backed him, but so many other leaders, and then Nancy Pelosi, and then there was a well-timed drip, new congressman, new senator comes out against him. So when he looks up and sees Kamala Harris in the White House, he has to wonder, is she part of it?
Maybe. Here's what Trump said a little bit more about who the running mate will be, because that'll take the news cycle. It'll bother Trump, too. Cut 18.
Can I tell you, I don't care. Let them do whatever. They still want to have open borders. If she picks Shapiro, she's going to lose the Palestinian vote. Everybody has their liabilities. I think if she picks Shapiro, who happens to be Jewish, she loses her little Palestinian base because they like me because they think I'm going to bring peace to the Middle East, even though I'm very strong for Israel. Israel loves me. But, you know, a lot of the Arab states like me, too, because you know what they want to see? They want to see peace.
And they want to see Iran neutralized. And they know that he recognized Iran as the problem.
Yeah, I think that's maybe true for the Middle East and the Arab states. I'm not sure it's true for voters in the U.S., like the anti-Israel, pro-Hamas demonstrators. I don't think they're going to vote for Harris anyway. They don't see a distinction between Harris and Biden. So,
and if you pick Shapiro, they would definitely not. Does that
I don't know. I still think Shapiro is the strongest candidate because they need Pennsylvania. It might cost them in Michigan, where there are many anti-Israel.
You think he gets? You think they win Pennsylvania if she picks him?
I don't know. No, I think it's still a fight. But I think she's. It would also show. I think she has to. She, you know, you mentioned all those flip flops. That's to portray her as strong, a strong leader who's anti-crime and so forth. I think that she has to come out against these demonstrators who are going to be at the convention in Chicago to ruin it for her. Now, she made a strong statement after the protests in Washington where they defaced a monument and took down the American flag.
A day later.
But she made a strong statement. I give her that. But that's different when they're on the scale of Chicago, where I think we're going to see. And that's her moment to do something.
So, Bill, I'll tell you, I feel a little differently. She knows the powers of justice. If she really cared, she would have called up Garland and asked for the prosecution. Now we find out from our reporting that they are looking to arrest some of those people and trying to figure out the ones who didn't wear masks,
right,
who they are and what they did. But to me, instinctively, the day of, what's going on here? You can't do that in America. You can't take government property, burn it to the ground, and put up a Palestinian/terrorist flags. That's not going to fly. That to me is a leader.
Yeah,
not the next day a printed letter.
Yeah, I think that's true. But this is, I'm talking in the context of a presidential campaign when she's accused of being weak and pro Hamas and so forth. All these accusations, she can point to a statement, and that might be enough for two or 3 months in a campaign. I agree, the substance hasn't been there. Look, the whole Biden administration, that's the problem. They say some words, but they don't mean them.
They don't. They mean something. The infrastructure deal, the new Green Deal, the CHIPS Act. The infrastructure deal is also a vulnerability because nothing's been done on it. The CHIPS Act, with all their DEI qualifications, it's hard to get off the ground. Plus, they can't get workers. Nobody wants to do these jobs. So the CHIPS Act's a great theory. It shows action, but there's no execution ever.
Well, one of the funny things, I saw a piece in The Atlantic, I think this week, comparing California and Texas on alternative fuels. And it's saying Texas is leading. And the reason is not that they're a green state pushing it, but they're easy to start up things and get things done. So they can do it in Texas, where in California you have all these regulations and so forth that just stymie projects.
What's amazing is almost all the issues are in Trump's direction. Everything. Oh, do you like the way the inner cities are running? Do you like the illegal immigrants who have overrun those cities? How's the sanctuary city policy working for you? Is that going great? What about low taxes? What about less regulation? Would you like the taxes higher? Would you like more regulation? Do you see the results of what just happened? Do you see the interest rates in response to the spending and the programs that were totally agenda driven? She is actually having to flip off policies her party believes in because they are terrible.
Right.
It's not even debatable.
She kind of has the luxury as vice president to say, that's the administration.
She hasn't said that.
Went along.
She has not done that yet.
No, but she has the luxury of not really being stuck with it. You have to stick her with it. They're not automatically associated with it.
Here's what J.D. Vance said. Then I want to get your take on Vance in the last minute. Cut 27.
Let's play devil's advocate here. Tell me, has Kamala Harris done anything you've asked her to do? She is the border czar. Has your border czar done anything you've asked her to do? And the answer is no. They send letters. They make phone calls. They are begging the American president and vice president for leadership, and their own border czar ignores them. That is a scandal. That is a disgrace.
He also took on a CNN reporter brilliantly. He's good combatively. Your thoughts on J.D.?
I think obviously he had a bad rollout, and I think one of the problems, he wrote a fantastic book about his upbringing and how he rose out of that. But one of the things about being kind of an intellectual is that you entertain different ideas and you think aloud. Those are some of them are coming back to haunt him. You know, taxing childless women, calling people cat ladies. You know, they're not wise for a politician who's running for office, and he's finding that out now. I think what would be interesting is JD may have an opportunity to redeem himself when he debates the vice presidential candidate, because he's good at debate.
He is.
And it'll be interesting to see how he debates whoever Kamala Harris picks as her running mate.
Well, Evan Gershkovich is back. That's great news for the Wall Street Journal and for News Corp, where we both work. And it's always great to see you, Bill.
Thank you.
It's going to be an exciting 90 days.
Yes.
It's going to be like
England. We're not going to get much sleep.
But you know what? We wouldn't want to. Listen, we'll come back, take your calls. Also, we'll update you that Taiwanese transgender, transsexual, whatever, won on the women's boxing division, joining the Algerian, who will be moving on to the next round. And her next fight is Saturday, or whatever.
Covering this election year like no other, it's Brian Kilmeade. The talk show that's getting you talking. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
Well, they're the weird ones, and if you've ever seen her with the laugh and everything else, that's a weird deal going on there. They're the weird ones. Nobody's ever called me weird. I'm a lot of things, but weird I'm not, and I'm up front. And he's not either, I will tell you. JD is not at all. They are. I mean, who wants to have open borders where prisoners? That's weird. Where prisoners and where mental institution patients are taken out of hospitals and jails. And
when she was AG, she was for sanctuary cities. She is for not building any type of wall. She's for decriminalizing border crossings. She has got to come out and say what's going to be weird is her changing her position on just about everything. And the reason why she's changing her position is because they're bad positions. The American people took it for a test drive. And they suck. So she's doing the unbelievable thing of changing, walking away from her years as senator, the most liberal, and 3.5 years as vice president. At one point, she's got to go, yeah, I don't agree with almost anything Joe Biden did, but he's nice. Julie Banderas is next. Then we talk boxing.
He's so busy, he'll make your head spin. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Many women can have testosterone, which is in what would be called male levels, and still be women and still compete as women. So I hope we're all agreed that we're not calling for people to go back to the bad old days of sex testing, I think, which was a terrible, terrible thing to do. And I'm sure we all agree that that is not the way forward.
I don't know. It might be the way forward. Julie Banderas is here, Fox News anchor, author of Fiona's Fantastical.
Yeah, Fantastical Ford. I have another book coming out, but it's not out yet, so we'll talk about that later. But I'm so proud of you to pronounce it properly.
Oh, what number was that, Eric? Did you tell me? All right. So that was this is going to be hard. I don't usually go into details about the Olympics and sex, but that was Mark Adams. He is the IOC spokesperson. Mm-hmm. He says, we're not going to go back to the bad old days of sex testing. But if you're a woman who wants to win a gold medal, I would like to know that the person I'm fighting is a woman.
Okay. So let me explain how this works.
So just to give people background, the Algerian one will fight again Saturday. A Taiwanese male/female won about a couple hours ago.
Okay. Yes, Lynn. So basically these two women were born with, let me explain, female genitalia. That makes you a female on the outside. So I'm talking external genitalia that you identify as a woman, but they were born with XY chromosomes. So it's called intersex, which, to be honest, I hadn't even heard of that word until today. So it's DSD. It's the condition is known as differences of sexual development or sex development or intersex. So what it basically means is that they have male chromosomes. So she has male chromosomes. She also has female chromosomes, but she's always legally identified as a girl. Her whole life, she was a girl. In fact, her own dad, when she was little, I think she was 9 years old, she wanted to start boxing. And he's like, no, girls don't box. So she's always been a girl, but she has the testosterone that you would have in a male. So then the question, it's like a fine line because she's not trans. And I think a lot of people misunderstood and thought she was trans, that she was born a man. She was born a female, but she does have testosterone. So then it begs the question, do you have to do DNA tests before every single fight, before every swim? Michael Phelps, you were telling me earlier, has something in his body that basically gives him a physical DNA advantage. What is it called?
Lactic acid.
So lactic acid.
So he produces about 50% less lactic acid than normal people.
So it helps you avoid fatigue.
So it basically makes you way stronger and way faster. And so he has an advantage. Would somebody disqualify Michael Phelps because he lacks lactic acids? I mean, how do you compare?
Well, no, number two is like, for example, you have Julio Cesar Chavez, has his skull is thicker than the average person.
So is mine. But that doesn't disqualify me from my job.
That's just because I can't get anything through.
Yeah, well, I'm hard-headed, Brian.
But I think that if I – so that's an example. That's how you're born. But I think when it comes to gender, I believe that if you're this new thing called what is it called again?
Intersex DSD, differences of sex development. It's got a few different
names. Well, the International Boxing Federation said, no, you can't box.
Right.
Yeah, the Olympic Committee, this Paris Olympic Committee says, yeah, you can box.
World Championship last year, she was disqualified. She was not allowed. But the Olympics is obviously a lot more fluid, as you noticed in the opening ceremony. They don't look at it the same way that the World Championships do.
Well, no one wants to look at that opening ceremony again.
No, that was pretty disturbing.
So the Italian boxer took four punches, and she said she felt her nose like go through her head.
Right.
She is now coming out. Altilia Carini, who abandoned her bout against his Algerian Imam Khalif 46 seconds in, says she wants to apologize to her opponent for how she handled it. Khalif is one of two athletes who have been cleared to compete in the women's boxing, despite having been disqualified last year's women's championship. The 25-year-old's participation in the games has proven controversial, as you know. She says, I'm sorry. If the IOC says she can fight, I respect that decision. It's something I intended to do. I actually want to apologize to her and everyone else. I was angry because my Olympics had gone up in smoke. She should be angry.
Okay.
Because you should be able to fight a woman.
She shouldn't apologize. I think now
absolutely
she's
not
getting pressured. The political woke, you know, community is obviously pressuring her. The trans community's pissed off. Everyone's pissed off. She should be upset. I mean, she's never gotten hit in the face like this ever. She, you know, actually quit after two punches to the face. So obviously the punch in her face was her initial reaction. She said right there when she fell to her knees and she was crying in the ring, this is unjust. So she felt like she was unfairly fighting someone who obviously had way more strength and testosterone than she. But does that make her opponent a male?
Well, let me just tell you something. A lot of times you have to sit down and tell people what they're able to do.
Mm-hmm.
Like people who watch me play the clarinet said to me,
wait, what? You play the clarinet?
Yeah.
Shut up. And wait, so do I.
You did?
Were you a band?
You still do?
I played the clarinet for President Bush in 1989 at the inaugural parade.
Did he know?
He didn't.
Yeah.
It was so weird.
But,
he didn't pick me out in the crowd.
They realized in a short time after, Brian's never going to be good.
Right.
So I couldn't. I don't hate the world. I don't blame anyone else.
Right.
I didn't have it. If you were born intersexed, you can't internationally. You're not going to be able to compete. There's other stuff you can do. I mean, the track and field does not let you compete. Wrestling does not let you compete.
Right.
So here's what Chris Roberts said. He's CEO of the International Boxing Association. Dealt with the same thing. Says you can't do it. Cut 36.
We weren't allowing this boxer to compete in our events. I find it remarkable how the IOC apply a different condition to this event. I feel disappointed for the Italian boxer because she's worked extremely hard.
Especially boxing. You're all alone. You're doing all this work for this moment.
It's not a team sport.
So you see Mark Adams said, leave her alone. Mark Adams as the IOC spokesman, and you see the CEO of International Boxing Association goes, no way. So someone's going to get killed. And I worry too, especially a contact sport. Bill McGurn was here from the Wall Street Journal. His daughter plays rugby at Notre Dame.
Uh-huh.
She said, if I saw this going on, I would not let my daughter
get on the field. I'd be scared to death.
And what about soccer? You met head balls. You saw, I interviewed someone 6 months ago play volleyball in college against a guy, transgender guy, banged the ball off her head. She still's got problems.
Right.
I mean, that's, and volleyballs are soft, like relatively soft.
Well, I would think if they were to do the DNA testing and they determined that she has more of the chromosome that would identify her as a biological male despite her genitalia, then she should have to play against other men. I mean, I wonder if she's ever even played against a man.
Fight? You mean fight?
Yeah, well, play, fight, whatever. Whatever sport they're playing or fighting in. So
they're just saying you should get it right because people count on you.
Yeah, no, they don't count on me for facts, Brian.
That's right. I was confused.
They don't count on you for facts either, by the way.
Oh, that hurts my feelings. That was a little bit too much. No, but I just think it bothers me so much, especially on sports that get no publicity. Amateur boxing, you get four people, mostly from your family. When you screw up like men's rugby, if you're playing in Australia, it's a big sport, but here you get nothing.
Right.
All you need is just let these people compete in sports, especially the ones that don't. Like if something happens in golf, I'm not really upset, or tennis. These people are going to get plenty of publicity on their regular tours. But the biathlon, all these things, when they finally have a chance to compete in gymnastics, just at least try to equal the playing field.
If you put yourself in swimming. The shoes of this Italian boxer, though, and you imagine the years and years and years that she's training, I'm upset that she apologized as well, because I think she's sort of like cowering and catering to the controversial outcome of her saying this is unjust. That's how she felt at the moment, and now she's letting the general public allow and sway
her feeling the way that she
felt like it was unfair.
So Julie Banderas is here. Julie, you realize the new Title IX reforms with this administration that they're going to put forward are going to allow transgender athletes to play in women's sports.
Well, that I feel very against.
Yeah,
okay,
this dress in the locker room.
This intersex thing is very new to me, but the trans sports community is completely unfair. I mean, you cannot have a male, biological male, compete against a woman and expect that to be a fair outcome. I don't care if you're taking any kind of transitional drugs. It doesn't matter. You are biologically male. If you and I were to do an arm wrestle right now, I'm pretty sure you'd win. I don't even know if
because
that's
because
you're
a man. I'm a real man.
Are you?
Yeah.
I mean, I'm just kidding. But I mean, I think that you would win. Yeah. And I don't have upper arm strength, but either way, you would have an advantage. If you and I were in the Olympics, I would say, no, that's not fair. He should be disqualified.
So do you know this, 17-year-old men's national team beat the women's national team by like 8 goals? Do you know the women's national team is the first or second best team, women's team in the world? It's not because the game was fixed. It's not because the refs like men better. It's not because we let women vote. And you know that was a huge mistake in 1919.
Oh, God, I can't believe they let women vote.
It was so huge.
Stupid.
You can't walk it back at this point.
No, I know. It's too
late. So this is the deal. Here's what President Trump said about it. Cut 39.
I'll tell you one thing. Men will not be playing in women's sports. And when you look at this young lady from a different country, what difference does it make? Just look and say, oh, man, what hit me? I just got hit by a horse. And she just, I've never seen that, where two jabs. And she said, I've had enough.
So imagine UFC too. I just hope some logic comes in. And look, this is my overall point. There are certain things you do. So, for example, if you want to transition to another gender, among the hurdles, you're now relinquishing your chance to play international sports with that new gender that you chose.
Or you play in international sports with the other genders that you were born with.
The transgender games. Looking for an underwriting sponsor.
Right. But you have to play with the biological sex in which you were born with, because that's the DNA that's going to make you comparable to your opponent. And it doesn't give you the upper hand, which
is
certainly
unfair. And
you can't
just every day pick a different gender.
No.
Like in baseball, you can switch batting style. You can be righty and lefty.
Yeah.
You can't be a switch hitter when it comes to sports.
No, you can't.
The entire, the gender switch. So that's where we stand. So, did we solve anything?
No, we haven't at all. Do you still think that this woman is trans, or have you at least figured that out?
Can't come in.
Brian, she was born with a vagina. That's female genitalia.
Pretty sure we shouldn't be saying.
Did that? No, I'm being honest. I mean,
that's what she was born with.
Let me explain how it works. A vagina or a penis.
Okay.
Okay.
Pretty
Does
sure
he understand
either one of those.
This, guys? No.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure this is.
See, even your own producer staff, they're like, he doesn't get it.
Right.
No, but if you're born with female genitalia, that does make you a female regardless of the XY chromosomes. But I agree that if you have, male chromosomes and you have testosterone, you should not be able to play against a female who is born with all female DNA.
Case in point.
Okay.
Lee Majors, they had to rebuild him. Mm. They had to give him a bionic material. He would probably win a gold medal in everything. But when he made that decision, and we made that decision as a country to make him the $6 million man, we eliminated his chances of competing in the Olympics.
Yeah.
So you understand there's good and there's bad.
Yeah. No, absolutely.
And there was a bionic woman, which I didn't buy. She had two bionic legs and a bionic eye.
Yeah.
That was too much.
Yeah, no. I mean, I think just come in natural, all female, all male.
Right.
But again, I think, you know, it's going to get complicated to start doing DNA tests on every single athlete. I mean, that's so now they're going to do DNA tests on every athlete. Like, where do you draw the line?
I don't have a problem with it. They test them all the time for steroids.
Well, they do. They do test them for drugs.
And that's why the Russians aren't competing. They got caught cheating. They're not even good cheaters. All right. When we come back, more with Julie Banderas, we'll talk about anything except genitalia.
Okay. Yeah. Let's do that.
Back in a moment.
Learning something new every day on The Brian Kilmeade Show. Information you want. Truth you demand. This is The Brian Kilmeade Show.
Everyone always says, why is Gutfeld number one in late night? And I know the secret. It's all the wisecracks that Greg makes at my expense. Our beloved Greg carves out special time each day to think of fun, clever, new ways to make fun of me, according to reports. And obviously, I don't think that I don't want the ratings to dip just because I'm here hosting doesn't mean we need to break the format. So each guest will tell some jokes at my expense. It's my first time hearing them, so here we go. Tom, begin.
Here we go. A pollster who correctly predicted every election since 1984 is now on record saying that Brian Kilmeade is a loser.
Kat, I know you. I'm dragging you into this, and this is reluctant, but this is your job. Take a shot at me.
Some of these are real mean.
Some
like,
of them?
This one is really not nice. When he did a play-by-play on the Puppy Bowl, they asked to be euthanized. That's really horrible. I mean, this one, too. Brian's on so many Fox shows, his nickname around the office is Jimmy Fallon. Oh, wait, this one's awful. Whenever he calls Mrs. Kilmeade, she lets it go to voicemail.
So that was, kept with the format. You're on tonight.
I am. I'm so upset that I wasn't on with you.
Right. Yeah. Why is that?
I would have loved to have had a shot at you. Oh, right. That's amazing. But then I get this radio show. So that's
right.
Funny.
That is true. Yeah. So in between, so what are your thoughts about Donald Trump going out to the Hamptons this weekend to raise some money? What does he do with her, with Kamala Harris getting all the publicity? Got to name a number two getting ready. Go to the DNC.
Yeah.
How do you think he should handle it?
Go back to talking about his attempted assassination. That worked for him really well for a while. But yeah, I mean, she's obviously going to be the center of the spotlight. The DNC is coming around. She's got to name a VP. So he has to figure out a way to sort of get the spotlight back on him. How does he do it? I mean, I guess by attacking Kamala and maybe trying to drum up some sort of response from the White House, because once the White House starts responding and they start battling, I think people love to watch Donald Trump go off on anybody.
How do you feel about – do you feel as though you have to compete against a woman differently if you're President Trump?
Well, that's the problem, because I think Nikki Haley, in fact – did better in the debates because I feel like her opponents were afraid to go too hard on her because she was a woman. I really do believe this. In fact,
and Vivek came off bad because he did go after
her. He did. That's right. So you really shouldn't look at gender when it comes to a political fight. I mean, you're running for the top office in the land, so you need to be treated the same as anyone else. But I know because people are very sensitive in the way that Donald Trump has spoken about women and to women in the past, that if these two were to debate, which I would love to see, people are going to be watching him very carefully to see how he talks to her. But I think the gloves should come off, and I'd like to see him talk to her the same way he would if it was a male opponent.
See, I don't. I think that I don't care about her feelings, but I care about the voters, women at home.
Right.
And in my back of my head, if
Well, you don't have to be degrading. I'm saying you should be just as tough. Now, don't get me wrong. I don't think that he should sit there and say some of the things that he has said to women that are incredibly insulting to women. I mean, I wouldn't be insulted. I would take it as blood all over your face. I'd be like, thanks. Thanks.
Oh, you're talking about what he said to
Megyn Kelly. Yep.
No.
Oh,
it was
no,
Joe Scarborough's wife. Mika.
Yep.
Yeah. So she comes in. I guess that they would engender some bitterness. If you want to hear some critics, how do you feel about how J.D. Vance has handled his single cat women comments?
Oh, my God. It's hysterical. I mean, I don't know what he was thinking by saying that, honestly. Like, but I used to be a single cat lady. And that's why I was single through my 20s.
Yeah.
Brian.
When did you get married?
When I was 36. But I had two cats all through my 20s. Did you hear that part? So I was single all through my
20s. Were you insulted by this comment?
I was not insulted. I was like, it's freaking true. Why do you think I got married at 36? Because I was a cat lady. I no offense to cats. I love felines.
So what changed with you?
my cat's died, I think.
Right.
I think that's what happened.
And then you said I got to either replace the cat or...
No, actually, I just started to get old and my eggs were about to dry up. So I was like, got to marry the first guy that will have my babies.
Okay.
That's what happened, Brian.
Didn't
think
it was going there.
Well,
let's go back to
is.
Politics for a second.
Okay.
Here's Eugene Robinson on Trump being dangerous. Cut 33.
There's clearly some deep insecurity and feeling of inadequacy that causes him to continually lash out and puff himself up and adopt this air of infallibility, which is absurd, but that's who he is. I think he is a really, really damaged person.
Is he a therapist?
Right.
He's so good.
I'm pretty sure he's not Dr. Eugene Robinson, but he's a columnist. Do you think they understand Trump yet?
No, I don't think they'll ever understand Trump, but that's what makes Trump so attractive to his base because he is unpredictable. I wouldn't call him insecure. I mean, I don't think insecurity comes from attacking others. I just think he's really, really aggressive and he knows what he wants.
So I'll watch you tonight on Gutfeld. Don't forget Saturday night, 9 o'clock Eastern time. One Nation will be live. Michael Waltz, Tommy Lahren, and I did a feature with Tyler Hubbard, one half of Florida Georgia Line.
I look forward to that. I love
can't
that.
Wait. It was a little bit of hesitation.
From the Fox News Podcasts Network.
I'm Ben Domenech, Fox News contributor and editor of the Transom.com daily newsletter. And I'm inviting you to join a conversation every week. It's the Ben Domenech Podcast.
Subscribe and listen now by going to FoxNewsPodcasts.com. Listen to the show ad-free on Fox News Podcast Plus, on Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music with your Prime membership, or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.